It was very beautiful, wasn't it? And it seems to be piece that's come about, maybe not necessarily written down, but come about when there was a move from the perfection of wisdom as a an insight practice. Well, we'll see, but hear a bit more about that in a minute. You know, a technique, a way of meditating, a way of reflecting. So there was all of that remained alive, actually, for it's this sort of came about, what, about 500 years after the Buddha had died. So it was a bit of a regeneration, really, of the Dharma. And later on, so there was a bit of a move where the perfection of wisdom wasn't just those practices and that approach. It was also became a bodhisattva figure in its own self, a female bodhisattva figure. So I think this hymn must represent where that's happened, because it's, you know, I'm not saying she. This is in the text. So it must have been written down just about a time when, after that time where that's come in. So it's a mixture, as a hymn, it's a mixture of both telling quite a lot about quite profound practices, but in the context of a beautiful figure that Sariputra is depicted as feeling great devotion towards. So it's quite a nice, it's just that mixture of devotion and clarity and direction, meditative direction. So, I do need this open. So, starts off, just going to read out a few lines as we go along. Starts off, the perfection of wisdom gives light. Says she is a source of light. From everyone in the triple world, she removes darkness and leads away from the blinding darkness caused by defilements. So leads away from the blinding darkness. So there's this, the beginning of the hymn. Then there's a sort of theme there, and it's an evocation of light. So Prajnaparamitar and the perfection of wisdom is, it's been used to evoke a sense of light and purity, and she's the source of that light and purity. Or perfection of wisdom is the source of that light and purity. So there's an evocation of light happening in the hymn, and there's in opposition to that, in opposition to perfection of wisdom and light and purity, there's the world, darkness, blinding darkness. It says she gives light and is unstained. The entire world cannot stain her. So she's evoked as bringing light and purity. And against that, there's the world, the world can't stain her, but the world itself, of course, is also not stainless, and it's not pure, and is not that source of light. So on the one hand, there's the evocation of light, perfection of wisdom, and on the other hand, there's the world and darkness and defilement and what was the other one? Wrong views, obscurations. So one could ask then, what does this mean? So first of all, what it doesn't mean. It hasn't got anything about original sin and God in it. And it's not an opposition of heaven and hell. It's not as an opposition of good and evil in that kind of way, although there is something reminiscent, isn't there, about the evocation of the goddess as pure and the world as stained to be got away from. So there is there'll be an echo of that in our minds. So just to be clear, then, that is not what this is about, not in that sense, not about God and the mother of God and the son of God and. On one hand, and us struggling with the burden of original sin on the other. So it's not that context. That's the first thing. But it is suggesting, it is saying that there's a state of being, there is a state of being which most of us, do not experience, may not even imagine, may not even believe in or think possible, or we have faith in that kind of pure state of being at moments, but it, we don't maintain it or it slips away from us. But it's saying strongly that there is a state of being which we have the potential to realise. And it's a state of being in which we would be the source of that light, and we would be pure in that sort of way. There would be nothing to impede us in ourselves and our mind, and the world wouldn't impede us in a kind of way. The world wouldn't be able to stain us, or if it threw up difficulties and so on and so forth, it kind of wouldn't stick to us. So I said it at the beginning of the retreat, I was in Sheffield at the weekend, and one of the things we were studying was the story about Milarepa and Rachunpa. And on one part of it, Milarepa is trying to wean Rachunpa away from the attachments that are stopping him. So the attachments are big obstacles to Rachunpa, and Milarepa is trying to help him overcome those obstacles. But Milarepa himself experiences no obstacle anywhere. So in the story of Milarepa, that's what happens is he flies on rocks through the air, he walks through stone walls, there's all sort of miraculous things happening, and you take them literally or not. But what they're meant to be saying, what he's trying to convey to Rachunpa is, don't let yourself be impeded. Look, nothing impedes me. So we may not or may not believe that you can, make a rock, sit on a rock and make it sail through the air. Sounds lovely. Mm. things don't impede him. So in the discussion, there's a seminar on that story, and in the discussion, Bhante says quite a lot about that. Yes, Milarepa is just unimpeded. There's nothing that impedes him. We're not unimpeded. Things rise up again. Things rise up in front of us, or come at us from behind, whatever, encircle us as and we feel them to be obstacles. They are obstacles to our practice. So we're in that position. All of us. There are obstacles to our practice, and we try and our best to overcome them, hopefully. But we're in the position where there are obstacles which we have to overcome. Milarepa is not in that position. He's unimpeded. The things that are obstacles to other people are not obstacles to him, because he's gone beyond that. Similarly, so coming back to the perfection of wisdom hymn, there's something similar in this. The Sariputra in this evocation is suggesting there is this state that we could attain, the same as the perfection of wisdom, where we would be unimpeded, to put it in the Milarepa story terms, or we would be a source of light ourselves. We would be able to illumine the world ourselves in a way that illumined the world, and the world then was no longer an impediment, an obstacle to us. So that's quite a promise, isn't it? It's also saying, although that's possible, that isn't the state that we're in. So it raises a question, doesn't it, about why are we not so attained? Why are we not like that?